stillen Räumen, wo das Licht nie bricht.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, everyone.
So imagine for a second that you are a detective.
Oh, I like this.
Right. But you aren't walking onto a typical crime scene.
And you're not looking for a person either.
Exactly. You are looking for a ghost hidden deep inside the human genetic code. You're trying to solve a mystery surrounding the most common lethal genetic childhood motor neuron disease on the planet.
Spinal muscular atrophy or SMA.
Yeah, SMA. So today's deep dive is a special mission for us. We're tracing over 25 years of relentless scientific detective work, watching this seemingly impossible genetic puzzle unravel.
Paper by paper.
Discovery by discovery. And we need to say this right up front. Today, we celebrate Professor Brunhilde Wirth at the Institute of Human Genetics, University Hospital Cologne, in Germany, and the many teams and trainees who built this body of work with her.
It truly is a story of just incredible persistence. I mean, to understand the sheer stakes of this work, you have to understand what SMA actually does to the human body.
Right, it's a devastating disease.
It really is. It causes the rapid degeneration of motor neurons in the spinal cord. And these are the vital cells that serve as the communication wires between your brain and your muscles.
And without them, infants experience severe muscle weakness.
Progressive loss of motor function. And in its most severe form, it often leads to early death.
But the genetics behind it are absolutely fascinating.
They are. Humans have this quirky evolutionary setup. We don't just have one gene responsible for making this crucial motor neuron protein. We actually have two nearly identical genes sitting side by side on our DNA.
SMN1 and SMN2.
Exactly.
So we have a main gene and a backup gene doing the exact same job. On paper, that sounds like a great insurance policy.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah, if the main gene breaks, shouldn't the backup just seamlessly take over? Why is there a disease at all?
Well, you've just hit on the core mystery that kicked off decades of intense global research. SMA occurs when that first gene, the primary one called SMN1, is missing or mutated.
Okay.
But the backup gene, SMN2, fails to step in and save the day. It turns out SMN1 is the gold standard. It produces 100% full-length, perfectly healthy, stable protein.
And the backup?
SMN2 is a deeply flawed backup. It mostly produces a truncated, unstable protein that quickly falls apart in the cell. Only about 10% of the protein that comes from SMN2 is actually functional.
Wow, only 10%.
Yeah. Professor Wirth's career, alongside her massive network of international collaborators, is the story of figuring out exactly why this backup fails, how to accurately measure that failure, and ultimately how to exploit that knowledge to save human lives.
They were essentially the lead detectives mapping the hidden mechanics of these genes. And that brings us to a massive aha moment in the literature. Let's look at a landmark study from 1999.
Huge year for this field.
They were trying to figure out the difference between the gold standard SMN1 and the flawed backup SMN2. What did they find?
Right down at the molecular level, the sheer scale of the biological error is staggering. Out of the entire massive genetic code for these genes, the critical difference between SMN1 and SMN2 comes down to a single letter.
Just one tiny typo.
Just one. A C in SMN1 is swapped for a T in SMN2, specifically in a region of the gene called exon 7.
But I read that the single letter change is what biologists call a translationally silent mutation. From my understanding, that means if the cellular machinery were to just read the genetic code and build the protein, that specific letter swap wouldn't actually change the building blocks of the protein at all.
That's right.
So it should be completely harmless, right?
Actually should be harmless, but our cells don't just read genes straight through from start to finish. They edit them first.
Oh, right, splicing.
Exactly. It's a complex process called splicing. Think of it like a movie director cutting together the final film from hours of raw footage. The exons are the essential scenes that make the final cut.
Okay, I like that analogy.
So that tiny CDT typo doesn't change the protein's core recipe, but it completely ruins the splicing instructions. It disrupts what's called an exonic splicing enhancer and instead creates a silencer.
So the director gets confused.
The cellular editing machinery gets completely confused by this typo and accidentally skips exon 7 entirely when putting the final instructions together.
And that skip section is crucial.
Absolutely crucial for the final protein to fold and stabilize. Without that scene in the movie, the plot makes no sense and the protein simply falls apart.
That is the ultimate biological absurdity. We evolved this great backup gene, but a single typo in the editing room ruins the entire production.
It really is. And the 1999 paper laid that foundation, but they didn't stop at just understanding the problem. They turned this knowledge into a powerful clinical tool.
Fast forward to 2002.
Right, in 2002, the team developed a fast, real-time PCR test to accurately count exactly how many copies of SMN1 and SMN2 a person has.
Now, for those of us who aren't in a lab every day, what actually is a PCR test and why was this such a big deal?
PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction. You can think of it like a highly targeted molecular photocopier. It allows scientists to take a tiny sample of DNA and copy a specific targeted segment millions of times until there's enough of it to easily detect and count.
Okay, so it amplifies the signal.
Exactly. And before this PCR test was developed for SMA diagnosis, it was often agonizingly slow. I want you, the listener, to put yourself in the shoes of a parent back in 2001.
That would be terrifying.
Your infant is losing muscle tone, and to figure out why you have to wait weeks for the results of a painful, invasive muscle biopsy.
Oh, wow.
But with this new real-time PCR test, doctors could take a simple blood sample and rapidly, safely quantify the exact genetic landscape of a patient in a matter of hours.
That alone changes the landscape of a family's medical journey. But it wasn't just about speed, was it? This test revealed something much deeper about the disease itself.
It provided a literal crystal ball for the severity of the disease. The team analyzed hundreds of patients and found a striking correlation based on the number of those flawed SMN2 backup copies.
Because remember, SMN2 still manages to eke out about 10% functional protein.
Right. So patients with the most severe form of the disease type, I usually have only one or two copies of SMN2. Their median survival, tragically, was measured in mere months.
Heartbreaking.
But patients with the milder type 3 SMA usually have 3 or 4 copies of SMN2.
So that extra trickle of functional protein from the additional backup copies adds up.
Exactly. It allows them to walk and live well into adulthood. By proving this mathematical relationship, Professor Wirth's team turned SMN2 copy counting into a global standard for prognosis.
It's incredible how a simple counting test allowed doctors to predict the course of the disease and prepare families for what was to come. But science is rarely a straight line.
Never a straight line.
Right, just when you think you have all the rules figured out, biology throws a massive curveball. And this leads us to what might be the most thrilling plot twist in this entire deep dive, the mystery of the discordant families.
This was a puzzle the team chased relentlessly. They started finding families where siblings had the exact same genetic profile.
Like identical DNA for this disease.
Yes, both children were completely missing the SMN1 gene, and both children had the exact same number of SMN2 backup copies.
So by all the biological rules we just discussed, they should have had the exact same severity of the disease.
But they didn't. One sibling would be severely affected, confined to a wheelchair, while the other sibling was walking around perfectly healthy.
Fully asymptomatic.
Completely asymptomatic.
You really have to imagine being the detective on that case. The genetic fingerprints at the scene of the crime are identical, but in one room a tragedy occurs, and in the other, nothing happens at all. It makes zero sense on the surface.
It suggested that an invisible shield was in play. There had to be a protective genetic modifier somewhere else, entirely in the person's genome, that was stepping in and overriding the SMA defect.
And in 2008, they found it.
They found the very first one, yes. In the fully asymptomatic individuals, who notably were all females in these initial families, the team discovered unusually high levels of a completely different protein called plastin-3, or PLS3.
So having a ton of this plastin-3 protein essentially cured them, even though they were still missing the core motor neuron gene.
Yes.
What does plastin-3 actually do to pull off that kind of rescue?
PLS3 is an architect of the cellular skeleton. It binds to actin, which are the structural filaments inside a cell, and it stabilizes them.
Why is that so important for motor neurons specifically?
Because these cells have massively long arms called axons that stretch all the way from your spinal cord out to your fingertips and toes. PLS3 stabilizes those long axons, helping them grow and maintain their vital connections to the muscles.
So while the underlying SMN defect was actively weakening the motor neurons, this plastin-3 superpower was stepping in like a structural engineer, reinforcing the scaffolding and keeping the neurons alive.
That's a great way to put it.
That was 2008, but the hunt didn't stop there. Almost a decade later, in 2017, they found another invisible shield.
Yes, and this time it required some serious shoe leather epidemiology. They found a 4-generation Mormon family in Utah.
The logistics of finding and studying a massive family tree like that are astounding.
It's a huge undertaking. In this Utah family, they had healthy individuals missing SMN1 and carrying four copies of SMN2.
Normally, four copies gives you type 3 SMA, right? It's a milder form, but you still absolutely get the disease.
Right, yet these individuals were perfectly healthy. To figure out why, the team used a technique called genome-wide linkage analysis.
I've seen that term a lot in these papers. Can you break down what genome-wide linkage analysis actually looks like in practice?
Think of it like playing a massive game of Guess Who across an entire family tree's DNA. Researchers look at the DNA of the family members who have the disease and compare it to the DNA of the family members who were protected.
Scanning across all the chromosomes.
Exactly, looking for a specific genetic marker that is always inherited by the healthy people, but never by the sick people.
And through this massive computational matching game, they discovered that this time the protective shield wasn't an increase in a protein like we saw with Plastin 3.
No, it was a severe reduction in a completely different one, a neuronal calcium sensor called NCALD.
Wait, I need to wrap my head around this. Boosting a structural protein helps, but lowering a calcium sensor also helps. On the surface, those sound totally unrelated.
They really do.
How does lowering NCALD protect against SMA, and does it even connect to the Plastin 3 discovery?
This is where the genius of this research really shines. It wasn't just about cataloging random genes, it was about connecting the dots to understand the underlying machinery of the disease. The team proved that both of these mechanisms, having more Plastin 3 or having less NCLD, actually rescue the exact same cellular process.
Which process is that?
It's a biological process called endocytosis.
Endocytosis. If I recall my high school biology, that's essentially how cells absorb materials from their outside environment, right? Kind of like a cellular supply chain bringing in cargo.
That is a perfect analogy. Think of the motor neuron like a bustling city that suddenly loses its ability to receive cargo shipments.
Yeah.
The roads are blocked, the supply chain is broken, and everything grinds to a halt.
Because of the low SMN levels.
Yes. The team discovered that the core problem caused by low SMN levels in these motor neurons was a failure in endocytosis. But if you randomly happen to have the genetic luck that boosts Plastin 3 or the genetic luck that lowers NCLD, your body creates a bypass.
It forces the supply chain to work again.
Exactly. This proved that SMA isn't just about a missing protein. It's about a specific cellular transport failure that the body can actually fix itself.
That is profound. The cure wasn't sitting in a petri dish in a lab. It was already walking around inside the protective mutant genetics of healthy family members.
It's incredible.
And this brings us into the modern era of treatments. There's a massive 2020 review paper in our stack of sources celebrating 25 years of SMA research. It outlines how this field moved from giving families a definitive death sentence to ushering in an era of groundbreaking treatments.
Real tangible treatments.
But how do we actually fix the core issue? I've seen things about new drugs, but how are they actually addressing that original splicing error?
Because the researchers understood exactly how that single C to T letter swap in SMN2 caused the skipping of Exon 7 pharmaceutical companies, could design drugs specifically tailored to fix that exact biological typo. We now have treatments known as antisense oligonucleotides, or ASOs.
Antisense oligonucleotides, that is a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
How does an ASO actually fix a broken gene?
You can think of an ASO as a tiny custom-designed piece of genetic whiteout. It's a synthetic molecule designed to enter the cell, find the flawed SMN2 gene, and physically stick to that exact spot where the splicing silencer is located.
So it just covers it up.
By covering it up, it forces the cellular editing machinery to stop skipping exon 7. The machinery reads right through it, and suddenly the flawed backup gene starts churning out full-length healthy protein.
It's brilliant. You are literally masking the typo so the cell can read the manual properly.
Exactly.
But Professor Wirth's lab didn't just sit back and watch these new therapies roll out. They kept pushing the boundaries. A 2019 paper shows they started exploring combinatorial therapies in severe mouse models of SMA.
The reality is that while these new ASO drugs are absolute miracles, they aren't always perfect, especially if they're administered after a patient has already started showing severe symptoms.
So they needed a multi-layered approach.
Right, so the team decided to tackle the problem from multiple angles at once. They gave the severe SMA mice a low dose of the SMN-boosting ASO drug, but they also administered a drug specifically designed to lower NCLD.
They were chemically mimicking that protective shield they found naturally occurring in the Utah family.
Yes, a 1-2 punch. fixing the protein deficiency at the genetic level while simultaneously forcing the cellular supply chain to reopen.
And the results?
Stunning. They proved that hitting the disease from two completely different angles worked significantly better than just one treatment alone. It opens the door for entirely new, multi-layered therapeutic strategies for patients who might not fully respond to the baseline genetic therapies.
It's amazing how quickly the science moves from observing a family pedigree in a clinic to developing a tangible, multi-layered therapy, which brings us right up to the present day with a fascinating paper published in 2026.
A very recent and important one.
This paper highlights the real-world modern challenges of this genetic revolution. We are now in a reality where universal newborn screening for SMA is happening in places like Germany and Australia. Every baby gets a heel prick, and their DNA is tested for SMA right at birth.
And this screening is crucial. With these modern therapies, if you can treat a baby before they show any symptoms, you can often save their motor neurons entirely.
But newborn screening relies on standard algorithmic tests.
And standard tests are programmed to look for the most common genetic signatures. This 2026 paper tells a gripping story about two newborns, one in Germany and one in Australia. Both babies tested positive for severe SMA on the standard newborn screen because they were missing the standard SMN1 gene.
So you have two families who are given this terrifying news right after the birth of their child. And because they are missing SMN1, these babies were slated to receive intense, highly expensive treatments. We're talking about gene therapies that can cost upwards of $3.5 million per child.
The medical machinery was ready to move. But when the secondary standard tests were run to check their backup SMN2 copies, the clinical picture didn't perfectly align.
Something was off.
The clinical teams reached out, and Professor Wirth's teams stepped in to do some precision genetic sleuthing. They bypassed the standard algorithms and sequenced the entire region base by base.
What did they find?
They discovered a completely new anomaly. They found a tiny four-letter deletion right near the very end of the SMN1 gene.
Now, you'll have to help me out here. I've read that a four-letter deletion throws off something called the reading frame of a gene. Why is losing just four letters such a massive deal to a computer algorithm?
To understand a reading frame, imagine reading a sentence made entirely of three-letter words. Let's say the cat ate the rat. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
But if you delete just one letter, say the E in the HE, and keep reading in groups of three, the sentence becomes THC ADA TET HER AT.
It turns into complete gibberish.
Complete gibberish. Our genetic code is read in three-letter chunks. A four-letter deletion shifts everything out of alignment and usually results in a broken, useless protein. That's exactly how the standard screening algorithms interpreted it.
The computer flagged it, essentially saying, broken gene, severe SMA, initiate $3.5 million therapy.
Exactly.
But I'm guessing the team didn't just blindly trust the algorithm.
They absolutely did not. In clinical genetics, this kind of newly discovered anomaly is called a variant of uncertain significance. It's the genetic equivalent of a massive maybe. You don't know if it causes disease or if it's harmless. So the team took cells from these patients and ran rigorous functional studies to see what the protein was actually doing.
And the results flipped the script entirely.
The functional studies proved that this specific tiny deletion didn't destroy the protein at all. Instead, it somehow produced a completely stable, highly functional, previously undiscovered version of the SMN protein.
Wow.
It was a genetic variant of uncertain significance that turned out to be completely 100% benign.
The tests were throwing a false positive. Because of this rigorous base-by-base genetic detective work, the clinical teams realized these babies were actually fine. They were naturally producing enough functional protein on their own.
The children were spared unnecessary extreme medical interventions.
The paper notes that today, at 24 months of age, both children are fully healthy and thriving. Over $7 million in medical costs were saved. But so much more importantly, two families were spared unimaginable anxiety and unnecessary medical procedures for their tiny infants.
It perfectly encapsulates the signature of Professor Wirth's career. It's a relentless drive to ensure that basic genetic discoveries, zooming all the way down to single letters of DNA, are translated into tangible clinical consequences that protect and save human lives.
But as you look through these 10 papers spanning decades, there is another recurring theme that is impossible to ignore.
What's that?
The massive lists of co-authors on every single one of these papers. The incredible number of trainees, lab techs, and international collaborators from all over the world.
Oh, absolutely. This deep dive isn't just about one brilliant mind sitting alone in a room. It's about the orchestration of a massive global community.
The sheer scale of the experimental work is staggering.
Over the years, they studied the mechanics of these genes in yeast, in microscopic worms, in zebrafish, swimming in tanks and mouse models, and crucially by sitting down and working intimately with patient families across the globe, from Germany to Utah to Australia.
You simply cannot map a disease from a single letter mutation all the way to a global therapy without a dedicated community.
You really can't.
When you look at the entirety of this timeline, what does this all mean for the listener and for the families affected by this disease? It means that today SMA is no longer just a clinical mystery or an inevitable tragedy. Thanks to Professor Brunhilde Wirth and her dedicated teams, it has been transformed into one of the greatest success stories of modern neurogenetics. To Professor Wirth and to everyone who played a part in this journey, we owe you great and many thanks. Your enduring impact has literally rewritten the fate of thousands of children.
The scientific legacy here is profound. It teaches us that the answers to our most devastating diseases aren't always found by inventing something completely new in a laboratory.
Sometimes the answers are hiding in plain sight,
tucked away in the protective mutant genetics of healthy family members. We just have to be curious enough and persistent enough to find them.
Which leaves you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over. As we enter an age where everyone's DNA might eventually be sequenced right at birth, how many other seemingly broken genetic variants are actually secret protective superpowers waiting to be discovered? Could the cure for the next great medical mystery be hiding in your own DNA right now? Think about it. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show in your podcast app so you never miss a deep dive. Catch you next time.
In stillen Räumen, wo das Licht nie bricht,
welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Also, stell dir mal vor, du trägst den exakten genetischen Code für eine absolut tödliche Krankheit in deiner DNA.
Was hier eigentlich ein schweres Schicksal bedeuten würde.
Richtig. Jede molekulare Analyse und jeder Standardtest sagt unweigerlich voraus, dass du schwer krank sein müsstest. Aber dein Körper ignoriert diesen Code einfach.
Du bist völlig gesund.
Genau. Du hast keinerlei Symptome und lebst ein völlig normales Leben. Wie ist so eine biologische Abweichung auf zellulärer Ebene überhaupt möglich?
Das klingt nach Science Fiction, aber das gibt es wirklich.
Und genau dieses Rätsel nehmen wir uns heute in unserer tiefgehenden Erkundung vor. Wir zeichnen eine wissenschaftliche Reise nach, die über ein Vierteljahrhundert umspannt.
Eine Reise, die wirklich zeigt, wie aus einem verheerenden genetischen Defekt eine behandelbare Kondition wurde.
Today we celebrate Professor Brunhilde Wirth at the Institute of Human Genetics, University Hospital Cologne, in Germany, and the many teams and trainees who built this body of work with her.
Ja, das ist eine wirklich bemerkenswerte wissenschaftliche Karriere, die wir heute ehren.
Absolut. Und es geht hier nicht nur um abstrakte Genetik, es geht um Arbeit, die reale klinische Konsequenzen hat, die lebensrettende Therapien ermöglichte.
Und die unser Verständnis des menschlichen Genoms im Kontext neuromuskulärer Erkrankungen wirklich revolutioniert hat.
Wenn wir in die späten 90er Jahre zurückgehen, also konkret die Zeit zwischen 1999 und 2002, da müssen wir uns zunächst die Krankheit ansehen, um die es geht. Die spinale Muskelatrophie oder kurz SMA.
Damals die häufigste genetische Todesursache bei Säuglingen.
Genau. Menschen haben hier eine besondere genetische Architektur. Es gibt das primäre SMN1-Gen und ein fast identisches Backup, das SMN2-Gen.
Wobei dieses Backup ein faszinierendes, evolutionäres Artefakt ist. Das kommt so nur bei Menschen und einigen wenigen Primaten vor.
Und SMN steht für Survival Motor Neuron.
Richtig. Das Gen ist überlebenswichtig für die Motorneuronen, also jene Nervenzellen, die unsere Muskelkontraktionen steuern.
Bei SMA-Patienten ist dieses Gen aber mutiert oder komplett deletiert.
Und das rettende SMN2-Gen produziert zwar dasselbe Protein, ist aber bei weitem nicht effizient genug?
Okay, lass uns das genauer betrachten. Das wurde ja 1999 in einer essentiellen Zusammenarbeit mit der Gruppe von Elliot Androfeny entschlüsselt. Das berühmte Lorsen Paper.
Gen in einer fast schon trivial erscheinenden Abweichung.
Einer einzelnen C-zu-T-Transition innerhalb des genetischen Codes.
Ein einziger ausgetauschter Buchstabe.
Und dieser winzige Austausch führt dazu, dass beim zellulären Splicing-Prozess ein entscheidender Abschnitt einfach übersprungen wird, das Exon 7.
Die Kopiermaschine überliest gewissermaßen ein essentielles Kapitel der Bauanleitung.
Mit gravierenden Konsequenzen. Das Protein ist am Ende verkürzt und biochemisch hochgradig instabil.
Es wird von der Zelle rasch abgebaut und es bleiben letztlich nur etwa 10-15% des benötigten voll funktionsfähigen Proteins übrig.
Was für die Motorneuronen einfach nicht ausreicht. Aber die Forschung blieb ja nicht bei der reinen Analyse stehen.
Nein, die weitaus drängende Frage war ja, wie man das in ein klinisch nutzbares Werkzeug für die Diagnostik überführen konnte.
Was uns direkt zu den Publikationen von Wirth im Jahr 1999 und dann Feldkötter und Mailman im Jahr 2002 führt. Das Team entwickelte extrem zuverlässige quantitative PCR-Tests.
Man muss bedenken, wie anspruchsvoll das methodisch damals war. SMN1 und SMN2 sind zu über 99% identisch.
Da einen Assay zu designen, der die exakte Anzahl der SMN2-Kopien verlässlich zählt, war eine beachtliche Leistung.
Und sie bewiesen, dass die Anzahl dieser SMN2-Kopien wie eine Kristallkugel wirkt.
Eine extrem robuste Genotyp-Phänotyp-Korrelation.
Genau. Ein Patient mit nur ein oder zwei Kopien entwickelt die schwerste Form Typ 1 SMA. Bei 3 oder 4 Kopien sehen wir deutlich mildere Verläufe.
Das hat die genetische Beratung für Familien radikal verändert. Man konnte plötzlich eine evidenzbasierte Einschätzung des zu erwartenden Verlaufs geben.
Das war das Fundament für fast alle späteren therapeutischen Entwicklungen.
Und hier wird es wirklich interessant.
Ja, jetzt kommen die Ausnahmen.
Während Labore weltweit diese Kopien zählten, tauchten plötzlich Familienmitglieder auf, die absolut kein SMN1-Gen hatten, aber völlig gesund waren.
Geschwisterkinder mit exakt demselben genetischen Befund. Beide kein funktionierendes SMN1, beide identisch viele SMN2-Kopien.
Ein Kind schwerkrank, das andere völlig gesund. Das ist, als würde der Hauptmotor eines Schiffes ausfallen, der Ersatzmotor stottert, aber man entdeckt plötzlich ein verstecktes Segel, das das Schiff trotzdem perfekt auf Kurs hält.
Ein wunderbares Bild. Das ist das Konzept der schützenden genetischen Modifikatoren.
Das Kölner Team hat 2008 in Science publiziert, dass bei diesen gesunden Trägern das Protein Plastin-3 oder PLS-3 massiv überproduziert wurde.
Was hier faszinierend ist, diese Modifikatoren reparieren nicht das fehlende Protein selbst.
Nein, sie reparieren die zelluläre Infrastruktur.
Genau, sie greifen viel weiter stromabwärts in die Maschinerie ein.
Und 2017 im American Journal of Human Genetics fanden sie einen zweiten Modifikator, NCALD.
Neurokalzin Delta?
Der Mechanismus war hier invertiert. Nicht eine Überproduktion, sondern eine signifikante Herunterregulierung entfaltete diese schützende Wirkung.
Zwei völlig unterschiedliche Proteine, aber das exakt selbe Resultat. Vollständiger Schutz.
Weil beide mit dem Aktin-Zytoskelett interagieren und die Endozytose modulieren.
Den essentiellen Recyclingprozess für Neurotransmitter und Membranvesikel an den Synapsen der Motorneuronen. Ein absoluter Paradigmenwechsel. Es zeigte, dass man diese zellulären Transportwege medikamentös ansteuern kann.
Also, was bedeutet das alles?
Wenn wir auf das umfassende Review von 2020 schauen, sehen wir, dass dieses Vierteljahrhundert Grundlagenforschung direkt zu echten lebensrettenden Therapien führte.
Wie Nusinasen, ein Antisens-Oligonukleotid, das dem SMN2-Gen beibringt, das fehlende Kapitel Exon 7 wieder mitzulesen.
Das Medikament blockiert die Proteine, die das Überspringen verursachen würden. Der Körper produziert plötzlich wieder ausreichend funktionierendes SMN-Protein.
Ein enormer Erfolg. Aber monotherapeutische Ansätze schlagen nicht bei jedem Patienten gleich gut an.
Besonders, wenn die Krankheit schon fortgeschritten ist.
Und da dachte das Team weiter. Das Paper von Torres Benito aus dem Jahr 2019. Was passiert, wenn man diese neue Therapie mit dem Wissen über die genetischen Beschützer kombiniert?
Wenn wir das mit dem Gesamtbild verknüpfen, haben sie im Tiermodell eine Kombinationstherapie etabliert.
Sie gaben eine niedrige Dosis des Splicing-Modifikators Nusinersen und hemmten gleichzeitig NCALD.
Sie bauten den natürlichen Schutzmechanismus künstlich nach und verabreichten ihn mit der Standardtherapie.
Die Synergieeffekte waren frappierend. Die Symptome wurden viel stärker gelindert als mit jeder Einzeltherapie.
Das ist zweifellos die Zukunft der Behandlung. Multiple Ansätze, um noch effektiver zu sein.
Was parallel nach immer präziserer Diagnostik verlangt. Und da sind wir im Jahr 2026 beim Neugeborenen-Screening angekommen. Das aktuellste Paper von Wirth und Kollegen.
Screening rettet Leben, weil die Therapie beginnen muss, bevor die Neuronen irreversibel absterben.
Aber es gab falschen Alarm bei Routine-Screenings in Deutschland und Australien.
Zwei Neugeborene, bei denen der Standardtest null Kopien des SMN1-Gens anzeigte.
Das wirft eine wichtige Frage auf. Wie gehen wir mit unklaren Testergebnissen um?
Besonders, wenn die anschließenden Gentherapien über 3,5 Millionen $ kosten und nicht ohne Risiken sind.
Bei der tiefergehenden Sequenzierung fand man eine winzige Verschiebung im Laserraster, nahe dem Ende des Gens. Eine 4-Basenpaar-Deletion.
Vorhersagealgorithmen stufen so etwas fast immer als hochgradig pathogen ein.
Aber das Team hat akribische funktionelle Studien durchgeführt.
Und der Aha-Moment war gigantisch. Diese spezielle Mutation löste gar keine Krankheit aus.
Sie zerstörte das Splicing nicht, sondern erschuf ein völlig neues, stabiles SMN-Protein.
Die Motorneuronen dieser Kinder waren perfekt geschützt.
Der reale Impact ist unglaublich. Zwei völlig gesunde Babys wurden davor bewahrt, extrem teure und unnötige Therapien zu erhalten.
Ein Meisterstück der funktionalen Genomik.
Wenn wir das nun zusammenfassen, kristallisiert sich eine echte wissenschaftliche Handschrift heraus. Erstens ein tiefes Verständnis von RNA-Splicing.
Zweitens die genaue Vorhersagekraft von Genotyp-Phänotyp-Korrelationen.
Und drittens die bahnbrechende Macht von schützenden genetischen Modifikatoren.
Unser Genom ist eben kein starres Konstrukt, sondern ein dynamisches Netzwerk, das eigene Verteidigungsstrategien besitzt.
Und solche Durchbrüche entstehen nicht isoliert. Great and many thanks an all die Beteiligten.
Die unzähligen Trainees, die globalen Kollaborationen und Laborteams.
Und vor allem die Familien, deren Bereitschaft, an den Studien teilzunehmen, diese lebensrettenden Therapien erst möglich gemacht hat.
Ohne sie gäbe es das alles nicht.
Absolut. Und das bringt uns zu einem abschließenden, provokanten Gedanken für dich. Wir haben Jahrzehnte damit verbracht, Gene zu reparieren, von denen wir wissen, dass sie defekt sind.
Aber die Arbeit von Professor Wirth an gesunden Trägern zeigt etwas Unglaubliches.
Unser eigenes Genom verbirgt wahrscheinlich bereits die Heilmittel für unzählige andere unheilbare Krankheiten. Wir müssen sie nur in den Menschen finden, die insgeheim immun dagegen sind und unbemerkt unter uns leben. Was könnte dein Körper insgeheim heilen? Ein faszinierender Gedanke. Danke fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.
In stillen Räumen, wo das Licht nie bricht, hast du das Signal gesucht im Rauschen? Schicht um Schicht, womöglich nur ein Wort im Kopf kurz bleibt, bis klare Evidenz die Richtung neu beschreibt. Du bliebst nicht stehen, wenn ein Ergebnis laut erscheint. Du prüftest Funktion, bis der letzte Zweifel weicht. Mit ruhiger Hand und Fragen, messerscharf und klar, hältst du die Wissenschaft verlässlich Jahr für Jahr? Und wir singen für die Arbeit, die standfällt und bleibt, für den strengen Beweis, der Wahrheit stets treu bleibt, für Leben, die geschützt sind durch ein Denken so klug, großen und vielen Dank. Wir ziehen den Hut. Ein kleiner Schnitt und doch verschiebt sich das Gewicht. Ein feiner Faden trägt Bedeutung, leise, aber nicht. Am Labortisch, wenn Daten langsam Form annehmen und Spuren auf dem Blut das Wesentliche.
Gleiche benennen. Nicht jedes N ist das N dieser Spur. Nicht jede Regel hält der Natur auf Dauer nur. So lernen wir neu durch jeden Schritt von dir. Präzision und Geduld und Mut im Jetzt und Hier. Und wir singen für die Arbeit, die standhält und bleibt. Für den strengen Beweis, der Wahrheit stets treu bleibt. Für Teams und Lernende, die du getragen hast mit Ruhm. Großen und vielen Dank. Wir verneigen uns vor dir. Treu bleibt.